It's another Sunday night watching the superstars fight. You know it's what we love to do. Talking about NXT or WWE, and we can't forget about AEW. Viewer's Choice on the North-South Con. Viewer's Choice on the North-South Con. Viewer's Choice on the North-South Connection.
Welcome to episode 13 of Viewer's Choice, live on the North-South Connection. Boy, Money in the Bank is all said and done with. I'm Tim.
I am Marcus.
And we are exhausted.
Did you say Money in the Bank is lock, stock, and loaded?
I would, but that's also a fully loaded catchphrase.
It it's July, so I figured it was all good.
Yeah, it's all good. Okay. Thank you so much for joining us after I guess you could say we're not used to playing games this late nowadays with WWE. First post-pandemic pay-per-view, and we're already back to our 8 p.m. nonsense. We're going overtime. We're going into the 11:30 hour. It's or into the 11 o'clock hour. It's 11:32 Eastern time for you all, giving you guys the official time stamparoo on us, and we've watched Money in the Bank. Just overall thoughts really quick.
I think even if this show is not the first one, the first pay-per-view to have fans back, I still think it would have went, quote-unquote, this long. Money in the Bank has quickly been rising up the ranks as far as, like, the big tentpole events for WWE. Like, of course, you have Royal Rumble, you have WrestleMania, you have SummerSlam, you have Survivor Series. But, like, I think Money in the Bank is sliding into, like, the top three. This is a routinely great show. Not just, like, sometimes it's a hit, sometimes it's a miss, but, like, the company usually delivers really well for Money in the Bank.
And they've done a fantastic job here at setting the table for SummerSlam.
SummerSlam.
In literally a month's time. SummerSlam Saturday. Correction. Go ahead.
The SummerSlam.
The SummerSlam. That's right. Suck it, Aaron.
it's a Bret Hart household.
That's right. We love Bret. So if this podcast goes over into midnight, JT's got to pay us for 2 days worth of pay, right? Like this
Money in the Bank Sunday and Money in the Bank Monday.
Yeah, if this podcast goes longer than 30 minutes, JT owes us overtime for the next day's pay. Just want to make sure we're all good here. But if it's your first time here at Viewer's Choice, thank you guys so much. We're here to give you the kind of pared down nuts and bolts of what you may or may not have watched, whether Peacock helped you or hurt you in your viewing experience.
Oof.
To give you what you is must see, what is must miss, and of course give you your MVP of the night, as we've done since the beginning of 2021 and probably beyond. But we'll go through a rundown, rather, of what all happened. We started off with the women's Money in the Bank ladder match. Right.
I feel like we do need to mention the kickoff show. I know that is not pay-per-view proper, but we did have a tag title change.
There was implications, and so we'll go from the kickoff. Kickoff, we had the Usos, Jimmy and Jay, defeating Dominik and Rey Mysterio.
Seven times.
The new SmackDown Tag Team Champions, Nikki A.S.H., which, by the way, for any one of us who know, if we're going by strictly acronyms, Nikki A.S.H. is actually N.A.S.H., which means she's the second coming of Kevin Nash. So we all need to stand for Nikki A.S.H. In this present moment. But Nikki A.S.H., your Money in the Bank winner, match number 2.
Should we give all the winners if they haven't seen the show yet?
Yes.
Warning, we're going through all the winners, so if you don't want to be spoiled on the show yet, maybe fast forward like 2 minutes.
Okay, whatever. All right. There was the Raw Tag Team titles. Almost and AJ Styles might have retained. Who knows? Then Bobby Lashley defended the Universal the WWE Championship against Kofi Kingston. He might have won. Who knows? Match 4 was the Raw Women's Championship match.
Yes, I believe so.
With Charlotte Flair and Rhea Ripley.
Mm-hmm.
Then the Men's Money in the Bank match.
Correct.
and then right into the head of the table and the ultimate opportunist Edge. So of everything we saw, what is must see on this here Money in the Bank WrestleMania briefcase Sunday?
I'll start. I think the main event.
Of course.
Now I will preface it by saying this. I think this is the it doesn't even feel right.
It's the worst of all of Roman Reigns' title defenses.
Right, but like if I was doing star ratings, I'd probably still give this like 4.75 Like
I think what hurts this match is the overbooking of the finish with the run-in of the Usos getting stifled by Dominic and Rey Mysterio, and then the run-in, the not one but two run-ins of Seth Rollins that eventually sway the tide for Mr. Uwaa, the big dog, Mr. Uwaa man himself, Roman Reigns. But I feel like all of that extra overbooking gets us to like the big must-see moment of all of Money in the Bank, which is the official announcement, declaration, setting the table that Roman is the head of for SummerSlam in the green and gold of John Cena.
Now, look, we need to be serious here for a second.
Okay, tell the people about the Cenocalypse,
y'all,
and the color chart.
So, myself, Tim, Josh, and Terrell, two of our close, longtime personal friends, we came up with this color chart.
This was back in 2012, mind you, when John Cena is at height of powers.
It was called the Cenocalypse.
Because he was coming out with a shirt color every, like...
every month, man. It was like a new color.
And it was like red, orange, blue,
green,
black,
white.
But then you get to green.
You get to green. And if you are possibly a newer wrestling fan, a newer sports entertainment fan listening to this,
you're not ready.
Y'all know nothing about no green shirt John Cena. Like, this is not a game. This is not a game.
I believe a friend of ours said that green shirt John Cena would beat Big E in 11 minutes and make y'all hate loving again.
Yo, John Cena will have you rage quit watching wrestling.
It's kind of like the, do you remember the sketch from Chappelle's Show where Chappelle goes to the cancer kid?
Yes.
And beats him in the video game? And
yes.
Beats him down. That is how John Cena makes us feel when he comes. Because
you'll be on your deathbed.
I want to play the game, man.
You'll be on your deathbed, right? Losing oxygen, and John Cena will make you pick up the sticks and keep playing just so he can hang 50 on you.
It's the meme of the mom making her son dance. He got in trouble at school for dancing. He's like, oh, you want to dance? So he's doing the Fortnite dance and crying. That is us. We are crying Fortnite, kid.
This is dangerous, man. I know, we all know where this is heading, right? Cena, Roman, SummerSlam, Las Vegas,
and
Super
up,
Stadium
and
show.
Up, and it's up, and it's up, and it's up.
Green shirt Cena is not to be trifled with. Green shirt Cena is no pushover. It is, according to our standings, I believe the second highest in danger warning. Like, we're doing like, hurricanes or whatever, tornadoes. Like F5 is like the big one, right? This would be like an F4. This is DEFCON 4. Green shirt Cena is serious business. Second only to the red shirt. And if he comes out with a red shirt for SummerSlam, it's a wrap. It is straight up a wrap. Like, I don't even want to watch the match if Cena comes out in red. But huge return. Big time moment. They held off on the physicality. I'm glad they gave us something at the end because I think people were thinking, all right, something's going to happen here just with the way that Edge and Rollins fought to the back, Roman standing in the ring. You could tell the exclamation point hadn't been put on the night yet, and you weren't sure if that was going to happen with the cash-in or with what we got. And what we got was
the return of John Cena.
The ultimate cash in. Man, done effed up now.
It feels good though. It feels good to see John Cena back. Like, especially with fans being back in attendance and with everything kind of with nature healing again. WWE feels right having John Cena, even for a SummerSlam appearance. You know, of course, John Cena. Hot off of a blockbuster appearance as Jacob Toretto in Fast 9.
Family.
It's all about family. Which is John Cena and Roman Reigns being at SummerSlam is the reason why I am pretty sure that Roman Reigns gets into Fast 10.
I feel like it's already been decided.
The Rock worked with John Cena. The Rock pulled Cena into the Fast franchise. Now Cena's going to do the same. And him and The Rock are going to reach out with both arms. And we're going to pull the big man, the big ooh-ah man, into the franchise again. Because he had a non-speaking role in Hobbs and Shaw. But doesn't matter. He's ready now. He's TV ready. The titties out.
Titties are out,
we're good. If I'm going to also talk about something that's must-see, I'm going to go with the men's Money in the Bank match.
Oh, okay.
Now, granted, the men's Money in the Bank match is must-see for two reasons. One, the match is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Two, this is also the match that Peacock started effing up on people, so you need to watch it to see whether or not you actually needed to see this. So go back in the replay and watch the men's Money in the Bank match. And then we may have to revisit this when we do a SummerSlam. It's like, hey, y'all, we actually rewatched the Men's Money in the Bank match. You could have actually skipped this.
It could be retroactive skip.
But I don't.
Retro jammed.
I don't think it'll be retro jammed at all. With Big E winning the Men's Money in the Bank match. And as for myself and my pro wrestling scorecard, I might have rolled the dice K, so to speak, and betted against Big E. But also, I've never been happier to lose a pro wrestling scorecard because Big E wins than ever. First African-American superstar to win Money in the Bank.
Huge. Yeah.
This pretty much just triple stamps, a double stamp that 2021 is the coming out party year for Big E.
Yeah.
And whether he cashes in the Money in the Bank contract on Raw against Bob Lashley or on SmackDown against Roman Reigns, or if there's someone in between who wins the title between now and then, it is setting up that Big E is going to be the star, the breakout star of 2021 in the post-pandemic era. It's nice to see that we're in a match that had Drew McIntyre and had Seth Rollins. Mm-mm. And to a certain degree, Riddle, because Riddle's hitting on a completely different level. And Kevin Owens, he's not someone who you can count out. But that they stayed the course, they stayed true, and they went with the potential of Big E as a championship contender than maybe pressing the panic button, going with a known quantity in Rollins or McIntyre or Owens.
Right. And I think it's, you know, and we've certainly done our fair share of bashing WWE for maybe being tone deaf or, making a decision that's baffling. But, like, I think they deserve some credit here for sticking the course with, or at least honoring the course with Big E. Like, they split up the New Day back at the last draft or whatever. They send the New Day to Raw. Big E stays on SmackDown. He's been pretty prominently featured on SmackDown, and they've built him up through the Intercontinental title scene, starting that again. And then now, this was kind of like the do or die with Big E, and they stuck with him. And I think it was pretty apparent Big E has the best connection with the audience out of probably any other face in WWE right now. And I think that was huge of them to stick with it, to know that's what the crowd was going to want to see. And that's what we got. We got Big E winning, and it's, I hope, a promising sign, because we've got two dominant heel champions right now on Raw and SmackDown, and the babyface scene looks a little light. You can see they're relying on John Cena, Goldberg, rumor and innuendo. We'll see what else and who else lines up for our WWE and Universal champions. But I hope that Big E is going to be that next guy. It certainly looks like Big E is going to be the one to dethrone either Roman Reigns or Bob Lashley. If you had a prediction, do you think it's going to be Roman and Big E, or do you think it's going to be Bob Lashley and Big E?
From all of the history that I've seen just from this, it makes perfect sense for it to be on Roman Reigns. Mm. Especially as a person who consumes a lot of the WWE product, including talking smack, there was a lot of seed setting with Roman and Big E when Big E was Intercontinental Champion, and Paul Heyman, where Paul Heyman pretty much says, this time next year at WrestleMania, Roman Reigns, Big E, mm-hmm. for the Universal Championship.
Right. Heyman cut that great promo about how
Big E would be remembered, like, Big E needs to not be remembered as being a member of the New Day.
Right.
That he needs to set his own course,
right,
and be his own man.
And that hit, like, heels bring up great points. I think that's why Heyman is so good. Like, it hit. It was true. And to see Big E get a huge win was really awesome.
And especially now that, like, we know from at least our wrestling historical brains that the draft is only but so far away.
Uh-huh.
The possibility of Big E getting help to combat the bloodline,
mm-hmm.
and reignite the feud of the New Day versus the Usos, and you add in Roman Reigns to that,
mm-hmm.
I think that the New Day versus the Bloodline could be the storyline that everybody wanted the Shield and the Wyatt family to be.
Right. And it never really had that conclusion, that finality.
It never had, like, it was, you want to talk about the ultimate stop and start, like,
yeah.
That is it. Except anytime you saw those six entities together, it was something to behold. But I would say even the weakest member of either stable is greater than a Rowan from that grouping.
Right. Like the stake, the quality of stake that we're about to get, if that this is the direction they go in, is
gristle.
Top notch. And of course, you're talking about the Usos and the New Day. For me, probably two top three tag teams in WWE history. Like, they're really up there.
At least top five. You know, I know WWE just came out with that top 50 tag teams list, and Usos were seventh.
Right, and Aaron and Ryan did a fantastic recap in their own version of the top 50 list as well on a North-South Connection. So I think that's Montreal to Boston. Does Ryan live in Boston? You live in Boston. Ryan, let me know where you live. I think it's Boston.
There we go.
I know it's not Memphis, because that's the other friend.
Yes. But you kind of make an excellent point, moving on to what I would consider at least another must-see thing.
It's Boston.
Thank you. Another must-see thing on this is the domination of Kofi Kingston by Bobby Lashley. This is Brock Lesnar Cena-esque stomping outage. And if anything, it's must see for the fact that if Bobby Lashley were WWE champion at any other time, that Roman Reigns was not on the God run that he is right now, Bobby Lashley could be quietly forming a case for one of the better WWE champions of at least recent history.
You're right.
This domination was intense. Now, I hope that this is not to make Bobby Lashley look so strong that when Goldberg shows up, Goldberg has this unbeatable, unstoppable colossus in front of him that, oh, I just got to conquer this for my kid and win the WWE championship.
The kid's got to be 20 next. Now, right?
I bet he can. He still jump. Can he jump the guardrail yet?
I don't know.
Because if he can't, then he's no use to me.
We'll find out.
We will, and then we can get Goldberg and his kid versus Dominic and Rey Mysterio, and it's gonna be great.
You had a great analogy while we were watching the pay per view together.
Yes.
For old baseball heads out there, you want to run that by?
So we're going back to the summer. The home run summer where Mark McGwire breaks the home run record, hits 70 home runs. Everyone remembers Mark McGwire breaking 61 and being the home run king. But Sammy Sosa hit 66 that same year and was chasing Mark the entire year for the home run title and being like the king of all home runs. If Sammy Sosa would have had that season in any other season, it would be notated as one of the greatest home run hitting seasons of all time.
Mm-hmm.
But because he finished second behind Mark McGwire, it is an also ran.
Yep.
And that is how Bobby Lashley's title reign will look compared to Roman Reigns's in this same time frame. Like, I get it. There's certain people who are going to tell me that, well, neither of them are even the most dominant champion in WWE right now because Walter is still the United Kingdom champion. And I was like, there was a whole year where he defended it in his living room on a couch because the UK was on lockdown during pandemic. And that's not his fault. But also, no, his title reign, a year of that reign, just because you didn't defend it doesn't mean like you just get to count 365 days onto your reign to pad stats.
It's that Paul Heyman line where he's like the current reigning and defending. He's the current, but he was not reigning or defending.
Right. He was the current and reigning because he was reigned, but like he wasn't defending.
Yeah.
He wasn't doing any like.
Right. And again, out of his control, out of his control.
His fault.
Right.
But.
We're not counting that.
Also, that's
and it's an NXT title.
That's also my way to dunk on Walter because I can't stand Baby Huey at all. Like, he's not for me. Him or his other Walters, I don't care. But Bob Lashley, the way that he picked apart Kofi Kingston is a sight to see. It's a mean streak of Bobby Lashley we have not seen before. And I just hope it's not to make him look so pristine that when Goldberg comes,
right,
Goldberg just cracks his paint and takes the title and then moves on,
right.
But that's also because I love a good squash match. I know you do too.
Yeah, it's nice to see, like, sometimes somebody just gets stomped out, like it just happens, and not everything needs to be this wonderful back and forth, five-star classic, Savage Steamboat, blah, 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 blah. Like, sometimes you just look at two dudes, you're like, all right, I believe it. And I believe it. Like, Bob Lashley is almighty. Like, he is a physical specimen, a rarity of athlete. And on that end, so is Kofi Kingston, but also more so in the athletically gifted, jump out of the gym, that kind of creativity. And it was a true styles clash, which I think made for a great matchup. But it was basically, once Bob Lashley got his hands on Kofi, it was a wrap. And it was good to see that different style of matchup. It was just, it was very straightforward. And I would also give it a must watch.
Awesome. Unfortunately, not everything on this event was must watch. Is there anything you would say is must skip?
I would say the women's Money in the Bank ladder match.
Okay.
We might disagree here, but for me, that is a hard and fast skip. Come on, skip.
It was a very creative finish to the Money in the Bank ladder match.
Mm-hmm.
But that's about it.
There was a lot of logic fails. And I try not to watch wrestling with logic fails because it's pro wrestling.
Can you give an example?
So, Alexa Bliss, who started the match by trying to use the Fiend Force to lower the contract down. Well, WWE terminology. The briefcase holding the Money in the Bank contract. And the crowd popped, thinking they realized what she was trying to do. She gets bipped before she can do that. There's other spots in the match where she's using the Fiend mind control or whatever to get people down from the ladder, to stop people, to try to hypnotize people. All fine character stuff. I think Alexa Bliss is knocking it out of the park. Totally fine with it. But then everybody gangs up on her and they do the big Braun Strowman spot where they just throw a bunch of stuff on top of her. And by a bunch of stuff, I mean like six aluminum ladders. And then she's out for the rest of the match.
Okay, so...
And she's supposed to be like equal to, if not greater than, the Fiend.
So hear me out.
Who I have witnessed with my own eyes set on fire and melted into a puddle of ooze. I have seen the man hit in the face with a hammer and come back and sit up and win the title like 2 weeks later.
Yes.
I've seen the Fiend go through some ish, and she is supposed to carry the same level of power, if not greater than that.
So let me help you here. I think where the Fiend excelled in pain management, Alexa took the mantle of mental manipulation. See, she could summon the briefcase because the briefcase is connected to a controller that somebody has the button to. So she could have hypnotized the guy to lower the briefcase. She hypnotized Zelina Vega to come down off the ladder. She can't hypnotize ladders because they ain't people, dog. They ain't people.
Didn't she make like lightning appear in front of Randy Orton one time? Just a poof, fireball.
But that's dealing with Randy Orton. She did it to Randy. She can't do ladders to ladders. Like, she can't do that.
We have fallen down a deep rabbit hole of Fiend lore, and I apologize.
I ain't never seen Alexa Bliss make a ladder Papa Shango.
They should
blood.
Have had a ladder start to ooze. That would have been cool.
That would have been cool.
That would have been really
borderline
dope.
Borderline creepy.
That would have been dope.
Also dangerous. That's slick, and people have got to climb those.
I think that's the point. Is like somebody's like got their hands on the ladder, then they look at their hands covered in ooze from the ladder, and then they get tipped over.
But then she's got to do the boogie shake on the outside. She's got a boogie. And
so what we just booked would have been like 10 times better than what you will see if you watch the women's Money in the Bank ladder match, in my opinion. That's not to discredit the work that went into it. Everybody worked really hard. I acknowledge that. For me, it was a big miss. I did like the finish, and it goes along with the storyline. I don't know if it's so much a storyline, but... I guess like the character thread for Nikki Cross.
Yeah, the trope
right.
for her is being overlooked.
Overlooked and forgotten.
And as being, you can go and watch the finish. We won't give you the finish, but the finish explicitly is that she was overlooked and not accounted for and somehow found a way to sneak and claim the briefcase.
Yeah, and it was nice once again to see WWE call back to basically this character's whole story arc.
It's like, I'm not a superhero. I'm almost one.
Right. Yeah, I could really do some more dunkage on the women's Money in the Bank, but I won't. I'll just say it's a skip, and I'll leave it at that.
I'm not going to give a full skip to the other two matches on the card, but they're definitely not much watch, and that being the Viking Daddies versus AJ and Stamos, or your girl, Charlotte Flair, and Rhea Ripley.
So, real quick, I'll touch on the tag team titles.
I'm not saying they're skip, like they're right. Must skip, but they're also not must watch.
Right. It also depends how committed are they going to be to Omos. Because what they're clearly doing is playing on the Shawn Diesel dynamic. They're pairing the biggest dude they have, who's also probably one of the greenest dudes they have, with the best available worker that they have to pair him up with. And that's what they're doing. And if that's what they're doing, then Omos, if he progresses well, should be world champion right after Survivor Series, because the timetables add right up. I understand 1994 WWF and 2021 WWE are a little bit different, but if they are actually committed to this guy and he is a strong favorite to win the Royal Rumble or something like that down the line, I think if you're invested in Omos, this is going to be a must watch. If you are not invested in Omos, I would say it's a skip. I think personally the Viking Raiders got way, way, way too much offense on Omos. I think he looked way too almost like human. Like, I understand wrestlers' urges to want to show that they can wrestle. But you said it perfectly. Like, if WWE is a circus, they've got the big elephant
that can stand on one foot and dribble a basketball with its trunk in Omos. Like, people are not going to be able to boo Omos. You want to know how people boo Omos? If he dunks like Rey Mysterio off Titan Tower.
That might have to be it, because they've got a babyface here. I think you could see the way that AJ Styles was bumping and flying around. That certainly resembled a little bit more of a babyface style. I think there's some legs to them as a babyface act.
And that's also goes to say too, like, I'm not here to dunk on the Viking Raiders, but I'm 34 years old. I know what I like and what I don't like, and I know what's for me and what's not for me. And I've never been a big fan of the Renaissance Fair. I don't think I'm ever going to go to the Renaissance. I'll get dragged to the Renaissance Fair. There's only one thing I like about the Renaissance Fair, and men who go to the Renaissance Fair can follow me in my train of thought on that.
I know exactly what you're saying.
I'm not talking about the giant deep-fried turkey legs.
Nope, that ain't it.
But that's neither here nor there. I'm trying to be classy here.
Yep. Yep.
Okay.
Hey, I took the microphone away from my face.
That's right. If you know, you know.
Some giant other...
you know, tastefully done.
Yes.
Classy. Tasteful Renaissance attire. Puffy shirts.
Not yeah. Bunkhouse attire.
Not bunkhouse attire. We're not talking about knee pads over your jeans. We're talking about... Yep. That's what we're talking about. Tie it up real tight. Tie it up. Stop it. So, and the women's match is concerned. Again, I feel like you could say the exact same thing. If you're invested in Charlotte Flair, or Rhea Ripley at this point, this match is must watch. But to me, ooh, this match kind of, I was not fully invested in the match during its duration.
I would say this match, like for me, it's a personal watch. But if I was recommending it to somebody else, I'd probably say it's a skip. But for me, here's why it's a watch. Personally, I am a huge Charlotte Flair fan. And I think something really interesting happened during the beginning of the contest. The fans were chanting for Becky. We want Becky, 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 Becky. And Charlotte engaged the crowd, which I hope nobody tries to penalize her for, because we just spent a year and a half without fans. So maybe we shouldn't not acknowledge them when they make noise, like the company kind of taught people to do for the better part of the last 10 years.
I mean, the WWE Universe is the most valuable asset that the WWE has. Without the WWE Universe, they're nothing.
Right. So Charlotte tells them to suck it, and also
gives them the salute.
Gives them the one bird salute.
Give them that you're number one, Jack.
And I don't think that was a, I wouldn't say judgment. I don't think that chant was a reflection of their unhappiness with Charlotte Flair, because I think Charlotte Flair has reached that level of John Cena, of Roman Reigns in the WWE, where no matter how good or bad this person is performing, the crowd is going to boo because they are the heavy favorite. No matter how they are positioned, they will always be the heavy favorite, and the crowd will always boo them at the start of the match. And then the finish of the match, if their opponent wins, there will be a bigger reaction because of who they beat. And if Charlotte wins, there will also be a big reaction because it's going to be probably a fire finish like this was. And it's going to be good, and people like cheering good stuff. And then they will remember, oh yeah, we're supposed to not like her.
I think that it's more of an indictment on the matchup of Rhea Ripley and Charlotte Flair that they're getting sick of.
So that's what I was getting to. You have Rhea Ripley in there, who is supposed to be, again, another sports term, generational talent. She is supposed to be the next person that's going to take the mantle from the Four Horsewomen, along with Bianca and along with Raquel Gonzalez. I think it's safe to say the company is invested in those three moving forward. And the company, they just massively mishandled the presentation of Rhea Ripley. And she's still very young in here, her career. She still has a ton of potential and a ton of good matches hopefully left ahead of her. But they need to figure out what kind of character, what kind of wrestler do they want Rhea Ripley to be? And I hope that now that the title is back on Charlotte Flair, they can go back to properly deciding what kind of wrestler, what kind of character they want Rhea Ripley to be, and move forward from there. Because when she was a straight ahead, walking tall babyface, like she was in NXT and started out as a heel, she reminds me a lot of Sheamus. The company sometimes cannot decide, is Sheamus the guy who likes to fight, or is Sheamus the guy who runs away from a fight? And Sheamus is so good that he's versatile and he can do both. But early on, it was a little confusing. Is he likes to fight guy, or is he run away from a fight guy? He can't be both. And they have tried very hard to make Rhea Ripley both. And they need to decide and honor one of those commitments.
I think the last woman who is someone who embraced a fight is someone who we heard about tonight from the crowd. Becky Lynch is probably the last of the women who was
always welcome conflict.
Like, that's where the action is. I'm going to get some action. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, that's kind of how Becky and the Man blew up. She got her nose shattered in the midst of a fight and with her face erased by Nia Jax. She wanted more of the fight. Mm-hmm. And because they wouldn't let her take Ronda Rousey at Survivor Series, she then steamrolled that into one of the biggest runs ever.
Right. She's basically the biggest thing they have to a female John Cena.
Or Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Right.
Because like, Austin, very similar story arc of being injured, not being allowed to fight, wanting to fight, finding a way to interject themselves to make a fight. And then eventually, when they get to have the fight, they are cashing in on their opportunity. They're moving towards the championship, going against authority figures right. and all adversity, and picking up the victory.
Yeah. So, the crowd was not for this matchup at the start, but these two worked through it. Charlotte and Rhea Ripley. That is, they worked through it. They had a pretty good match. I think their best outing so far. And they really brought the intensity for the finish. And for me, being a bit of an old school fan, I think there's always this narrative that, oh, Ric Flair would work over a leg for 50 minutes. If you watch a lot of Ric Flair matches, not really. He might do something to the leg, come back to it later. But very rarely would Ric Flair spend 50 minutes working over one body part. Charlotte Flair waited until close to the end of the contest to get the opening on Rhea Ripley's leg, attack the leg, and then go into the figure four, then the figure eight. It was very bam, 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 and there was tremendous intensity behind it. Big time finish, and the crowd popped and reacted accordingly. So maybe I'm just feeling generous, but I think I am going to give it a watch, not just personal watch, but overall, I'd give it a watch.
I'm not gonna vouch on that. I'm not gonna ride with you on that one.
That's all right.
We'll split the baby on that. As we draw this episode of Viewer's Choice to a close, we have to assign an MVP for Money in the Bank.
Mm-hmm.
And who would you give your MVP award to for Money in the Bank?
This is a tough one. I've got two names.
Well, there's two of us.
Uh-huh.
So hopefully the name you say is... The name I say is your second name.
I'm still going to go with the head of the table, Roman Reigns. The match, the main event, in a show called Money in the Bank, he has enough cachet and put on enough quality of a match to justify a Money in the Bank match not closing the show. Very good match with Edge again. There's been better Roman Reigns matches this year, but still very good to close out a pay-per-view. And the huge moment was seen at the end. That doesn't mean anything if Roman Reigns is not who he is and is not knocking it out of the park and is not on this run, this God-tier run that he's been on since last August. So I'm still going to go with Roman Reigns.
And while Roman Reigns is an easy answer, I'm going to go with the other answer. And I don't think it's who you were going to say. But for as great as Big E winning and cashing or getting the Money in the Bank contract for the men, I think Bobby Lashley's dominant performance tonight at Money in the Bank over Kofi Kingston locks in MVP status for me. We unlocked a new version of Bobby Lashley here tonight with the tenacity that he displayed. And I think it's now just perfect time for this second leg of the Bobby Lashley almighty era to take effect. Especially if he gets through Bill Goldberg.
Bill Goldberg!
At SummerSlam, allegedly. Mm-hmm. At the SummerSlam, the SummerFest.
SummerSlam?
It's going to unlock new challengers and new things for Bobby Lashley to do in the month, in kind of the dead season of WWE, the Septembers, Octobers, Novembers, leading into the Royal Rumble.
I wanted to touch on that earlier and got sidetracked, but that does bring me to Big E winning the Money in the Bank contract. While, yes, he did do all that great work setting up Big E versus Roman at next year's WrestleMania on Talking Smack months and months and months ago, I feel like there is more of a lane to Big E versus Bob Lashley for the WWE title.
And I also meant to have brought that up as well.
Not just because of the New Day being on Raw and the draft and everything like that coming up, but there is a segment on the show early on, and it might have been after the Women's Money in the Bank match, I can't remember when, but it was early, where the Usos have their newly won tag team titles and they're backstage with Roman Reigns.
Mm-hmm.
And they acknowledge Roman Reigns as
the head of the table.
The head of the table. The
tribal chief.
The head of the family, right? All that good stuff. Roman's soaking it in. That's what he wants to hear. But there is a moment there where...
There's two moments. I'll give you the first one first.
There's two.
So the first one is you can easily... You can see from an outsider looking in, and Roman is blind to it, either whether he's knowingly blind or he's willfully blind, like, or whether he is actually blind or he's letting it happen. Jay has to coerce Jimmy into acknowledging him as the tribal chief.
Mm-hmm.
Jay has figured out this game. Jay figures out I have to say whatever he wants me to say to stay close. So that's why when Jay goes, I'm proud to be the right-hand man of the head of the table, the tribal chief. I acknowledge you. And then Roman points to Jimmy, and Jay goes, bump with the elbow. And Jimmy goes, oh, yeah, man, same. You're my tribal chief and whatever, and everything's cool and yeet and whatever. And Roman's like, ah, yes, that's what I want. Then we get the hug, and then we get to you.
So, again, got to give WWE credit here. A beautiful piece of camera work. They start off the shot and film probably 70% of the backstage promo. You see Roman Reigns, and standing on, I guess, behind his left shoulder is Paul Heyman with the Universal Championship, and you have the Usos. And as the scene goes on, the camera closes in, and you just see the bloodline. And once they get to the part that Tim just talked about, Roman brings it in for the big family hug. Well, Jay swings all the way around.
Jay is closest to the camera.
Closest to the camera, so he is hugging Roman's left shoulder. And he looks lock solid.
Into the distance.
Into the distance. And at first, you just think, okay, he's giving kind of a stare, or maybe he is not happy with what's going on, kind of resentful, like, I'll do it because, you know, this is the situation I'm in.
We're better together, I get it.
Right.
Yep.
But then you realize that's where Paul Heyman is standing with the Universal Championship. And Roman had already just called Jey Uso main event Jay. And as much as I would love, absolutely love Big E versus Roman, and it's even what I want, I don't think we are done with the story of Jey Uso versus Roman Reigns. And that might be where we are heading at WrestleMania. And that might be the person who beats Roman Reigns.
And if that is, I can't wait to talk about it on a future episode of Viewer's Choice. But that's it for us here on episode number 13 of Money in the Bank. A big thank you to those of you listening. On the North-South Connection, northsouthconnection.podbean.com is your home for this and so many other podcasts. The year that was Wrestling War Zone, list goes on and on and on. We couldn't do justice to just how much different content there is on the network. All can be found in one place on the North-South Connection's Podbean site. Subscribe to the North South Connection on any of your podcatchers of choice, and just everything drops to you at a regular pace. We'll be here after every WWE, AEW, and NXT pay-per-view, which means next up for us, baby, is SummerSlam Saturday, and you may have to find a way out of something, which we'll talk about on a future episode of Final Wrestling Place, which is our other podcast of choice on the soon-to-be-named network. It's where we take the nouns of professional wrestling, the persons, the places, the things, the ideas, and we assign arbitrary red points and green points and put them in either the good place or the bad place. And this season is a good place celebration. It's summertime radness. As you're listening to this episode live, you can also catch our most recent episode of the APA Invitational from Vengeance 2003. So for the remainder of the summer, July into August, we're going to talk about the cool things from the summer months, or cool things that happened within the summer in the world of professional wrestling. And that can be found on the soon-to-be-named network, soon-to-be-named-network.com, soon-to-be-named-network.com. A shout out to all of our other pod adjacent friends, not on the North South Connection, but Final Wrestling Place, or not Final Wrestling Place. That's our podcast. Silly me. At Odds with Wrestling, We Need Wrestling, Pod Van Dam, Three Count Thursday, The A Show, soon to be Hit My Music. Coming up, a special shout out to our official third man, the Jingle Meister, David Kincannon, who is responsible for the lovely theme that you heard at the beginning of this podcast. He's also responsible for all of the imaging that you hear on Final Wrestling Place and many other podcasts on and off of the soon-to-be-named network. So a big shout out to him as well. If you want to follow us on social media, you can. Follow the show at VC on North South. You can follow me at Not the Tool Man. You can follow Marcus on the Wrestling Speakeasy. If you know, you know. That is it for us. Again, as we said, we will see you back here for SummerSlam Saturday. After that will be AEW All Out, unless there is an NXT pay-per-view on SummerSlam weekend.
Right.
Then we're pulling double duty, but I hope not, because SummerSlam's on a Saturday. So for Marcus, I'm Tim, and always remember,
the choice is yours.